6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians of all kinds. Good morning to you. Good morning to you, Mark Riley.
Good morning to you, Mark Maron.
Here we go again, midweek.
Yeah,
Wednesday.
Yeah.
How you feeling, man? You all right?
I'm all right, man. I'm all right. I mean, I yesterday was a very, very bizarre day for me.
Yeah, what happened, man? There's a big meltdown, big freakout.
My paycheck disappeared into a bank's black hole.
Dude,
that's what happened yesterday.
I get scared of that stuff all the time. I don't trust computers. A lot of people do all their banking online. I wouldn't even let them direct deposit my check because I like to go over to the person and hand it to the person and have the person hand the thing back to me. Am I crazy or what?
No, no. That was my mistake. I put it in the stinking ATM machine instead of handing it to a person. I might have had a break if I'd have handed it to somebody.
No, I never give my money to an ATM machine. The only machines I'll give my money to are the change machines, vending machines, and occasionally a slot machine. But not too often because I'm no good at it.
Snake eyes!
I'm no good at it. I'm no good at the gamble.
I can't gamble either. But, you know, the amazing
what
thing...
What happened with the thing, though?
No, no. The amazing thing about banks is that they don't tell you anything until you start investigating. I just found out yesterday that a change in our main branch that my wife and I made like 15 months ago has not yet shown up in the bank's records.
That's my biggest fear.
You know, I mean, I ended up having to go down to Union Square because that was the last bank that that she used that bank like 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Before my name was even on the account.
Wow. So the account's evolved.
I mean,
you've added things. You've taken things away.
Absolutely.
And then it gets confused. See, like sometimes I think, like, why not just keep all your dough right at home?
In a mattress.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or somewhere in a hole, in a box. I don't know.
Sometimes, you know, I used to live like that. For a long time in my life, I lived via the cash economy. Anything I couldn't afford, I didn't buy.
It freaks me out.
You know.
It freaks me out because, like, you know, all it takes is, like, something to break down, and then, you know, how's your money guaranteed? That's, like, the whole thing with Social Security, too, with this, you know, casinoization of Social Security, that if they do that, you have absolutely no guarantee of that you're going to get the benefits you need. And I get this fear even with just having my money in the bank. What if one day, you know, the bank closes down? I mean, you're supposed to be protected. God, you know, I'm so happy that in my life nothing has really happened to where it's sort of like, yeah, there's nothing we can do, there's no proof of this, there's no proof of that, and you're out everything that you have.
Well, see, all of your deposits, technically, if they're in banks that are insured by the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, FDIC,
right,
that means your deposits are supposed to be insured.
Right.
What they don't tell you is there has never, in my memory, been a run on the FDIC. In other words, there's never been a situation where, like, millions upon millions of Americans have gone to the FDIC and said, my bank closed, give me my money.
Yeah.
When that happens, we will see chaos across the United States.
Yeah, but it's like all it takes is one. It just takes a couple of glitches, you know. Just
takes
a couple of computer glitches.
Not even a couple. Half a glitch.
There are certain things that I can't even understand. Like, you know, they have problems. You know, watching the borders. They have problems monitoring, you know, things from outer space. But you can go anywhere in this world, stick a card in a machine, and get money.
Yep.
That thing seems to be set tight. Operates like a well-honed machine all across the planet.
Unless
what?
You use your middle name.
Oh, that's
what happened to me.
Yeah.
See, my checks are made out to my middle name.
Oh.
My account has my first name on it along with my middle name.
And dude, what about passwords, man? You know how many passwords you got to remember in one lifetime?
I know.
You're supposed to switch them up so you don't get screwed on something. How many passwords? I don't even know phone numbers, but I got to know 50 passwords for different things.
And they got to be at least a certain number of digits long. You know, I used a certain password for a long time, and then they made it five characters instead of four, so I couldn't use that one anymore.
You're supposed to switch them up so people don't meddle with
Man, it. Look, never mind. I can't tell you what my password is. But mine are really... But no, this is a classic example for me of, you know, why back in the day I used to think that, you know, even going to a bank was collaborating with the man. First of all, banks never make... I shouldn't say never. They very, very rarely make a mistake that is in your favor as a consumer or as a customer. The mistakes are made in their favor.
Never do you walk out going, oh, my God, I can't believe it.
Yeah.
I just got $5,000 that's not mine.
Yeah.
And then it happened to my ex-wife once. She went to an ATM and there was $250 sitting there.
Really?
And she couldn't figure out whose it was before or where it came from, so she just took it and we went out to dinner.
Well, possession is 9/10 of the law, except when they start banging on your door and saying, excuse me. Yeah. Yes, this is the local police. You got a $5,000 deposit, or you took $5,000 cash that wasn't in your account. We want it.
But now they got tapes, and they videotaped it. There was a scam of a guy that I knew in college, and some guy we both knew had taken this guy's ATM card and went crazy and denied it up and down, and then they went to the bank.
The
there's the picture. The dude right there taking the money out.
Hey, man.
I went to the bank yesterday. I did my transaction in person. I was a little cranky yesterday. You know, I've got this weird thing that I'm doing because I'm evolving into a pseudo-vegetarian now. I'm not really.
This is that. Where is that Jimmy Earl?
He got in my head, man.
Man.
You know, but I'll tell you, honestly,
what time is he here?
It wasn't Jim Earl, our writer.
Our writer. Yeah.
But he is vegetarian and he talks a good game. It was really. You sit down with Jim for a half hour.
Who's got the red? Who's got the black?
Yeah. You sit down with him for a half hour, you can see that meat is no good for nothing, no good for anybody, no good for the world, no good for you, no good for the animals involved, no good for the existence of the species
humanity,
all species.
Well,
so dig it. You know, I mean, I'm in Richmond on Saturday or whatever it was, and I go out to dinner, and I just have a bad grizzle experience. You know when you're eating a burger and you just sort of like it turns on you? You ever had something in your mouth turn on you?
Yeah.
I
have.
We're just sitting there eating, and you're like, oh, no, this is the last time I can do this for a while. There's something wrong with this meat. So I had that experience. And then we had Jim in here on Monday, Jim Earl, to tell us about methane and greenhouse gases.
And how people who eat meat are killing the planet.
Yeah, by eating the meat because their fix is, you know, the maintenance of the meat fix globally is depleting the world of its eating away the ozone.
Wait a minute, I got to stop you for a second.
Cow gas.
I'm curious about how this experience. What was it that made you think it was bad? Because I know what happens with me a lot of times. If I bite into something and it's got a piece of gristle in it or something that doesn't taste.
That's what it was.
I hate that.
And it was like I believe my father already made me pretty paranoid about mad cow and about meat-borne diseases. All right, and I generally don't eat chicken. All right, I really don't eat much meat. Occasionally, when my wife comes to town, we'll go get a porterhouse, right?
Yeah.
Which is nice. It's a special event. But see, sometimes I'll get on a little weird skid with the swine, and I start doing the bacon thing. And once you start with the bacon, it starts to happen every day. And then I've been eating that smoked turkey, and that doesn't bother me too much. But then I just said, you know what? I mostly eat fish anyways, so let's just scrap it for a little while and see how you feel. You know, aside from That was really it. And so now I'm in the process of scrapping it, but I just don't know I don't want to be a vegan. You know, what am I
are
not?
You, are
am
you
I
suffering
not
from,
cheese?
Like, red meat withdrawal or something?
No. I'm not, but I just had this slab of smoked turkey that I bought down at the green market, and I wanted to get through it. So, I'm almost through it. So don't get disappointed, Portland. Apparently, I have a bunch of supporters in Portland who are really, trying to get me into the vegetarian way of life. But give me an argument about fish.
Wait a minute. I'll give you an argument. I hate to do this.
Yeah.
But if you ever go, you know where the Jefferson Market is in Manhattan?
Oh, down on 6th Avenue?
On 6th Avenue.
Yeah.
Go in there, get a half a turkey breast cooked.
Okay.
You will never talk about not eating white meat turkey.
Bad?
No, it's wonderful.
Oh, well,
it is. And it'll last you 3 days.
Yeah. Dan
Pashman could make a week's worth of wraps out of a Jefferson Market half a turkey.
Well, that's what I got in the fridge is a smoked turkey breast, and I don't want to go on to it too long, but I here's what I'm going to do. Here's my plan. I'm going to finish the turkey breast, and then I'm going to go just, fish. No eggs, cheese.
No eggs?
Hey, little Costco-ho, what's the matter, man? What, you think I'm being crazy? How can it not be healthy?
I'm not saying it's unhealthy. It's just no chance of that actually happening.
Oh, you don't think I'm going to be able to do it?
No. I'll wager you on that, actually.
All right. Well, how long do you think it's going to take me to buckle? I'm just talking. Okay, I'm gonna go no meat. That means no pig, no poultry, no beef. I'm gonna eat the fish occasionally. I already went to the health food store today and I bought quinoa. What is it called? How do you pronounce it? Quinoa. I don't even know how to pronounce
Quiznos?
It.
Quiznos? Sandwich people?
No, it's a grain.
Oh, I don't know.
Oh, I'm such an idiot.
Well, that grain will be in your house for a long time.
Wait, no.
That grain will be sprouting weeds.
Dude, I did brown rice, man. I cooked up some brown rice. I got a new bottle of patchouli. I got some hemp underpants. I'm all set.
Underpants?
You got to wear hemp underpants when you're eating brown rice, or else you really don't get the full-on effect. Joel, the guy who produces one of the other shows here, when I told him, he's like, oh, man. I'll tell you something.
I'm sorry, have you smelled that office?
No.
Oh, my God, man.
All right.
And now, all right, so when's the next time you see your wife?
I'm going to see her in a week and a half.
Okay, yeah, I give it to a week and a half. And by the way, you're still eating turkey. So it's not exactly a stretch what you're doing.
No, but do you understand? No, wait. But I'm planning, Chris. I want to help. I'm building a foundation here. I didn't want to throw away the turkey because I thought, what could be wrong? Eating meat or buying meat and then going, you know what? I'm just going to throw it in the garbage. Like that animal isn't even worth me eating because I just decided that today is a different day. I'm going to throw his carcass away and not even utilize it properly. I had a very good sandwich last night with that turkey, and thank God I did. You know why? Because it would be sad for that turkey body to be out in the garbage just rotting uneaten, wouldn't it? And I gave some to my cats. What about that? Do I have to make my cats vegetarian? You know what? This whole thing is blowing my brain up. No, I'm going to finish the turkey and I'm going to go on. And I don't mean to disappoint anybody. You know, I don't care. This is something I'm working on. This is something I'm working on and we've got to evolve into. So like I said, I got the kino or whatever it's called. I got the brown rice going. All right, I made some beans with some collard greens, no meat in them the other day. It's a big day, Chris. But I have to admit, I'm going to eat the fish because I got a snapper fix. I'm afraid of tofu's fine, but there's something about it's all right. No.
Oh. And be careful about the fish, man, because fish will turn.
What have I got myself into, dude?
Well,
I'm going to finish a turkey.
Trying a different lifestyle.
I'm just going to go with fish. It's not that big of a deal. I don't eat this stuff anyways, except for fish. I got to eat the fish. And if you're a vegetarian and this is a problem for you, I'd like to hear the fish argument, please. Now, Dean, I already heard it once. The fish are people, too. I get it. But all just right. Tell me on a protein level. Tell me how I accommodate that. Howard Dean is looking like the guy for DNC chair. We talked to Donnie Fowler yesterday, who is still in the race, as far as we know. It's a long morning.
It's 18 minutes past the hour on the East Coast. You never know.
But we've got a couple of people dropped out. Leland dropped out, right?
We got a whole bunch of stuff going on with that Democrats, man.
Yeah, and also what's really exciting is that we've got some stuff that Donnie Fowler said yesterday that's pretty off-putting. It's 18 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Morning's Edition, delivering you from evil. In 3 hours or less, Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yep.
Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. All right, dude, so, Chris, so obviously this is it. Today's it. The turkey's going to be done today, and tomorrow we start. That's tomorrow, Thursday. And then we're going to discuss our wager later. All right, we're going to get into it. All right,
ooh.
Quinoa, I think, is how you pronounce that grain. I had it in my head, but, it's early. Quinoa. My Jubu trainer suggested it.
Your who?
My Jewish Buddhist trainer, Jubu.
Jubu.
Yeah, he's a Jubu. Yeah, he's a...
Wait a minute now.
He's influencing me, too. And the last thing I needed was for that guy to get in my head. All right, so let's... I talk to him all the time. He's going to get in my head, but I didn't want to necessarily, be like him. I want to be one of these guys that has a little beard and wears a sort of knit yarmulke all the time and sandals and drinks peppermint tea. Do I want to be that? I mean, I appreciate it. He's got to be out there doing that to make us feel peaceful as he, trains us or whatever. And don't judge me about the training thing. If I didn't have this guy, I would not be healthy. Let me be honest with you. This guy, Ari.
I'm not judging.
Now, some people out there, like Marin is a trainer. I'm not sitting there pumping iron. I'm doing the stretching.
You sold out.
I'm trying not to. I'm sold out to the man, to the new age man.
There you go.
Yeah. All right. So, dude, we had Donnie Fowler on. He's almost the last man standing against Howard Dean in this thing because Leland dropped it out. Yeah? Frost dropped out.
Frost dropped out.
What does that mean?
All right. Let's set the scene here. Yesterday, the AFL-CIO decided not to endorse anybody. That meant that Martin Frost, former Texas Congressman Martin Frost's bid, was dead in the water.
Yeah.
He then dropped out.
That was Frank's guy.
Yeah.
When we talked to Barney.
Frank was behind Martin Frost. Well, Martin Frost knew that without Labor's backing, he had no chance against Howard Dean. He dropped out. What's interesting about Frost, though, is that he made no endorsement of anyone else. David Leland, who was the former chair of the Ohio State Democratic Party, did drop out, did endorse Dean. So that makes two in 3 days, Wellington Webb on Monday and now Leland yesterday.
And you think that, we talked to Fowler, and I don't know Fowler, and I know, obviously I'm familiar with Howard Dean and the way he approaches things.
Mm-hmm.
But, Fowler was, he was interesting in the sense that he kept trying to say that, you know, he's been in politics a long time. He's been in politics 20 years. The guy's younger than me, so I guess, you know, tagging along.
He started as a kid. I met his father. I interviewed his father. He was the former Democratic National Committee chair.
So he was in politics when he was 12.
Essentially.
Does that count on your resume when you travel with your father on the road?
Yeah, licked envelopes.
Yeah. All right, but you know what I found disconcerting about it was there was something a little bit disingenuous in the way he was, you know, presenting his view of America, and I felt personally alienated by what he was saying.
Well, let me tell you something. The mistake Donnie Fowler made yesterday with you was trying to be an unpolitician while simultaneously sounding exactly like a politician.
Right.
That's the problem.
Well, he's got time. He's still green.
He's got plenty of time. And, I mean, he could run the party in 8 years, perhaps. But, you know, when you try to position yourself as an outsider, when you try to position yourself as a guy who works on the ground, you don't want to make the kind of broad generalizations that are typically associated with the kinds of things that politicians say, and that's exactly what he did with you.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, one thing I'm learning from seeing the reaction in the Senate to Howard Dean and the reaction to congressional of the congressional Democrats is that he makes them nervous. Because
yeah.
I guess, you know, historically, you know, the DNC chair is supposed to answer to them. But because he's such an ideologue, these guys are getting mad. You know, Pelosi was like, you know, well, he's going to answer to us.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Well, see, because they're afraid. Well, actually, I think they're going to end up, a lot of these people in Congress, Democrats in Congress, end up straying off the ranch because Howard Dean will be the chair. They're
straying off the ranch in the left direction?
No.
Okay.
In the other direction.
So they're going to isolate him?
I think they probably will try.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are people in the Kerry camp, quiet as is kept, that have said, you know, well, he doesn't need to be the spokesman for the party, blah, 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 blah. You know, I think the man ought to be given a chance to succeed or fail on his own merits. That's
right.
What the country's supposed to be all about. We're celebrating Black History Month. It's, you know, the content of your character.
Yeah.
So if Howard Dean's picked the lead Howard Dean, and let's see where you go.
Absolutely. And we're going to hear some of that interview from
Donnie Fowler. We're going to hear what was, as Mark so eloquently described it, as off-putting about this guy when we come back here on Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
The last great Stones album, 34 past the hour. I'm Mark Maron. It's Mark Riley. You're listening to Morning Sedition. Yes, sir?
Yes.
Yeah. That, you know, it's weird. We actually had to transcribe today's Palm Pilot from the Skype because Ramon, that was weird, right, Chris? Do I have to write that down? Yeah. So as tonight's Day of the Union speech approaches, one of the most important people is someone you may never have heard of. It's Michael Gerson. He is Bush's speechwriter, a born-again evangelical who just can't help inserting religious language into W speeches. Here's Gerson's Palm Pilot for today. 5 a.m., revised speech. Plead with President Bush for the 100th time that his opening line, "Welcome to my State of the Union address," is funny only to him. 6 a.m., insert Whore of Babylon and Barbara Boxer into the same sentence. 8 a.m., go through President Bush's draft of speech and eliminate half of the freedoms and two-thirds of the liberties. It's fine. He'll still have plenty left over. 1 p.m., remind him not to point to people in the audience and make the call me hand sign. Okay. 3 p.m., destroy President Bush's first draft of speech, the one with all the disturbing red bats, daggers, and pentagrams he drew in the margins. 7 p.m., last minute preparations. Tell President Bush that while his speaking in tongues idea is interesting, he might want to hold off on that until next year. Asamu Pada Patasa Pada.
Yeah.
Reverend Mort.
Mort. Reverend Mort.
Cardinal Mort. Apa Asapu Pada Patasa. Is he coming in today? No, it's not today. The other Milfington's coming in today with the war on brains. Cardinal Milfington won't be until Friday. Asa Putasa Matatasa. Anyways. So we're talking
about don't mock speaking in tongues.
Why not? Oh, my God.
It just sounded good.
Oh,
no, let me tell you something.
Yeah.
I went once to a church where they started doing that, And I laughed so hard I had to leave.
It's hilarious.
I really, yeah, because it is hilarious.
Bob
really
Toten used to do it. Bob Toten used to have that TV show, the gray haired guy. He just like, he goes, people, I want you to understand Jesus. It was just the weirdest thing. I don't know how that translates into send me money.
Money, yeah, I
but
know.
You would think that's sort of like.
That is what he said.
No, I know, but it's like, what kind of person is sitting there going, that's God speaking through it? Why is God speaking in gibberish?
Because people are desperate. That's why.
No, I know, but it's like, wouldn't God be, why can't God go, don't eat pork? Not like,
because every now and then God has to speak through individuals in incomprehensible ways to keep up the faith of the faithful.
To keep up the faith of the stupid. It's like, if you're wondering whether or not I am truly God's servant,
Well, no, there are a surprising number of people in the Bush administration who actually attend churches where they speak. And you know who was a big churchgoer? Clarence Thomas and Oliver North.
No.
Both attend churches where they speak in tongues.
Really?
Yeah!
They speak in tongues also, but it's called lying.
Lying, yeah.
All right, anyway, so, la-di-da. Donnie Fowler yesterday, almost the last man standing as a candidate for the DNC chair. Certainly it seems to be the one that has the best chance against Howard Dean, who said yesterday that he was not going to. Now, he wasn't going. He didn't say whether he would or he wouldn't stay until the end.
I know. That was so, you know, what was so tough about that question?
I don't know. But he said he will hang in there until the party is right.
Yeah.
What does that mean? Well, here's what bothered me about him was that, you know, we're talking and he starts stereotyping people. Now, look, I'm the first guy to say that a lot of us progressives, or if you don't think I'm a progressive, liberals, if you don't think I'm a liberal, Democrats, whatever, our team, a lot of us, you know, pay a lot of lip service to a lot of things, you know, without really taking, you know, extreme action, you know, but that's part of the communication. We're part of the party. But he started to condescend in that sort of populist way to what he called people, let me just hear it, intellectuals, people who spend time in cafes and salons. What is this, France? It was clearly a jibe. It was clearly a red state, blue state, latte drinking thing. This is coming from a Democrat. All right,
yeah.
And it was definitely characterizing, you know, what he saw as probably the Dean base. And then when I called him on it, he was very quick to act like he was referring to Washington.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's not the right stereotyping. They call those guys insiders, Washington insiders, not cafe salon.
I'm only talking about K Street. I'm not talking about the whole country.
Yeah, it was definitely a jab at the likes of me.
Yeah.
Okay, so what do you got there, Kayla? Let's hear Fowler from yesterday.
Local people know better. The more that I do campaigns, and I've worked on the ground in 14 different states during the last 20 years, Wyoming, Florida, Connecticut, New Hampshire, California, Mississippi, Alabama, you get the point. The more I do it, the more I realize that local people know better what issues work and how to talk to their neighbors.
But not the local people in cafes and salons.
Those are the ones in Washington. They like to sit around. They don't actually have to do the work of electing. They just do the thinking of electing.
All right, so I'm just trying to figure out, you know, who you're characterizing as these intellectuals. You're not talking about, you know, maybe somebody like myself who lives in New York City who spends a lot of time, you know, talking about politics. Are you just saying that? Because it seems to me that a lot of those people that are of that ilk or of the, you know, Starbucks generation or whoever you're characterizing these people as, that they need to be mobilized, and these are intelligent, thinking people.
They are. And let me explain. I'm not saying they're bad people. What I'm saying is, if you live in Washington, D.C. long enough, you think the Washington Post is the newspaper that everybody reads, and you think politics is on everybody's mind every day of the week, and you think that people wake up on Sunday morning, and they can't wait to turn on Meet the Press and see what Tim Russert has to say about the world. The truth is, on Sunday morning, most Americans are in church. Or, you know, they're recovering from Saturday night, while they're atoning for their sins in church. So the point is that if you live in Washington long enough, you lose a perspective on what really matters.
All right, but you know what I'm hearing you do. We understand that. Is that what I'm hearing is that you are playing on a little bit of that sort of blue state, red state stereotype thing.
I've got support. Yeah, that's what the other folks want to say. I've got support from every region of the country, from blue states and red states.
That's what the other folks. That was me talking to Fowler, Donnie Fowler, a candidate for the Democratic National Committee chair yesterday. That's what those people say. No, it's what I was saying, Donnie. And, you know, and it's so weird how he started to shape-shift in the middle there, like you were saying, where he was trying to present himself as just a, you know,
an outsider,
who talks to the people down there, and, you know, and locals know a lot more than, you know. And then, but the real, the heinous thing he did was, like, Oh, I'm referring to Washington, people who think the Washington Post is the only paper in the world and that really think that everybody lives and breathes politics. It's like, no, you were taking a shot at Northern Democrats.
That's let me, can I get a copy of that?
Sure.
The reason why I need a copy of this is, despite the fact we tried to raise him right, my son is considering a career in politics. And I want to make sure that he hears this tape as an example of what not to do.
Well, but your son, what is he trying to run for? What does he want to get into?
He's thinking about running for the city council in 4 years.
Well, that's good, though. You must be happy about that, right? Not really.
Not if they got to go into my background. I don't know.
Well, no, but or else you're worried that you're going to have to criticize your own son.
No. Riley rules, we don't criticize. If my son was an axe murderer, I wouldn't criticize him.
Really?
Not publicly, no.
Okay.
We're in a room by ourselves, that's different.
Right.
No.
Right. So, in private, you'd be like, you really shouldn't kill people with an axe.
Yes, yeah.
But publicly, you'd be like,
he's my son, damn it.
He's a great kid.
Yeah, that's right.
All right. So now the Democrats, the Senate, most of all of them, I guess, opposed Gonzalez, right?
No, that was the Democrats on the Senate Judiciary
Committee. Okay, so now it goes into the big house, right?
It goes into the big house. And now Harry Reid, the master of the Democrats' big house, which is actually a smaller house than the Republican.
I got his talking points yesterday. They were okay.
They're okay?
Right.
Yeah. All right, well, Harry Reid says that they will not, the Democrats in the Senate, in the full Senate, will not try to filibuster Alberto Gonzalez's nomination.
They're not going to hold it up.
Yeah, they're not going to hold it up. They are going to debate it.
Mm-hmm.
Mainly because of a very bizarre quirk in, and this is Black History Month.
Okay.
I prefer filibusters because that was the I knew you did. No, that was the tactic used by segregationists back in the day. When they wanted to stop, you know how long they filibustered the Civil Rights Act of 1964? Forever.
Yeah.
And there's something symmetrical about using that tactic on an Alberto Gonzalez. But I quibble. Obviously the Democrats have decided they want to make better use of their time actually debating his nomination, which is probably a good tactic. They're not going to stop him. Harry Reid's estimating 25 to 30 Democrats in the full body will vote against him.
Well, it's interesting that they, you know, that this guy, obviously, comparatively speaking, to comparing him to Condoleezza Rice, equally, they're both, I think, bad.
Equally but, heinous is
yeah,
the word,
but
right.
So, but for some reason they felt comfortable in opposing Gonzalez. Why do you think that is, Riley?
Well, first of all, it was two different committees. When it comes to Rice, she was before Foreign Relations.
So they have different jobs. Fine.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, they have different jobs, and they have different focuses.
But politically, they could have. There was substantial reasons for them to oppose Condoleezza Rice, but that was a fight they didn't want to fight. But they're willing to make more of a statement with Gonzalez.
Well, and you're going to see more senators voting against Gonzalez. Remember, there were a whole raft of people, including guys like John Corzine, Patrick Leahy, and a bunch of others, that all voted for Condoleezza Rice. Some of them are not going to vote for Alberto Gonzalez.
You think this is because, like, they didn't want to get involved with the global politics, that this is more important, that they can make this opposition more resonant with their constituents?
Well, it's also a numbers game. I mean, remember that before Condoleezza Rice, the last close Senate vote was on the confirmation of a Secretary of State was for Henry Clay back in the 1820-somethings.
Right.
All right. Now, in terms of the Attorney General, John Ashcroft was the closest nomination to crashing and burning, and he was 58-42.
Yeah, and this guy's a little more insidious to me than Ashcroft, because Ashcroft was, out and out a religious fanatic, whack job. But, this guy seems more like an Eichmann, I was just following orders, like it wasn't just me, we were all doing it, and it got away from us, that he's willing to defer to the bureaucracy to blame his evil on.
That's called going along to get along, and you see the same kind of back and forth vagueness in the Homeland Security nominee Michael Chertoff.
Let's talk about that when we come back. It's 45 past the hour on Air America Radio.
Hi, this is Rob Corddry from The Daily Show, here to remind you that when top news reporters and investigative journalists like me want their news skewed so far to the left it's wearing a dress, we turn to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Mark Mariner. That's Mark Riley there.
Yo.
This is Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Thank you for listening.
Yes.
I just want to say that, and good morning, Wednesday. Rough, man. Today was a little rough. So, you know, it's like there's no consistency, Riley. Some Wednesdays I'm like, wow, this is great. I finally got a groove going. This morning I'm sort of like, hey, oh, no, here we go. No, but I'm on it now. I'm on it.
You're on it. But you know what it was? Yeah. You're speaking in tongues, you did.
Casa posa patata, casa patata.
Bam.
Here we go. Here we go. Michael Chertoff.
Yeah.
Was once an assistant attorney general. Is that true?
Yes, he was an assistant attorney general. He was in charge of the criminal division of the Justice Department.
And here we go. Chertoff, translated from the Russian, devil, chair, devil, off, son of, or owned by, or nominated by, or worked in the Justice Department of. Now, those are, you know, I'm reading into that. It's my interpretation of the semantics. But you can, you know, it is implied in the Russian English dictionary that in the Justice Department of. The devil does also apply to this. I'm sorry, Riley, I digress.
No, no. I mean, look, Chertoff has got a number of problems that are going to come up as his nomination to be Homeland Security boss mm-hmm. moves forward. One of them has to do with the American Taliban, as he was euphemistically called by the media, John Walker.
Yes,
Lynn.
And as I say, he was a traitor, but he also took the semester abroad to a whole new level.
Well, an entirely whole new level.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was at one point scheduled to take this. There are two things that are problematic about Chertoff and Lynn. On the one hand, he was scheduled to take the stand, and Chertoff interceded to see to it that did not, in fact, happen.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yeah.
And the other thing, the other question is whether or not he, in fact, contacted the FBI or someone from his office contacted the FBI about questioning John Walker Lind without his lawyer being present, and whether that advice from someone in his office, who was later, by the way, demoted, whether that advice was ignored by the FBI, which apparently it was, because they did talk to him without his lawyer being present.
So that in that the onus for that goes right up to Chertoff.
Yes, it goes to Chertoff. Now, you know, he is he's one of those guys, you know, that has some good and some bad in him. To his credit, when he was a U.S. attorney in New Jersey, he went after racial profiling
mm-hmm.
in the state, which had been a festering sore for two decades.
Mm-hmm.
And he did, in fact, went after the fact that the previous past attorney general had known about it and did not do anything about it. So, you know, give him credit for that. But this whole question about playing fast and loose with things like the Geneva Convention, with the torture of detainees, holding detainees for longer periods. And by the way, detainees, not prisoners, not people who have been convicted of any crimes. People forget that hundreds of immigrants were swept up in the days and weeks after September 11th, not charged with a crime, except in some cases minor immigration violations. What Chertoff is accused of having done was trying to see to it that they were held as long as possible, in fact, without charge.
And this can be directly connected to Gonzalez as well.
Yes, it can be directly connected to Gonzalez, and both of them,
yeah.
I think, have to answer for the issue of whether or not they are prepared to play fast and loose with the rights that Americans, as people living here, take for granted.
Now, what about this judge that ruled that detainee tribunals, that the military tribunals, as opposed to a hearing in a court,
yes,
are illegal?
This was a very, very important ruling. This is District Judge Joyce Hens Green. And she said that the system of military hearings that the Defense Department, that's Donald Rumsfeld, set up, were unconstitutional because it denied prisoners access to evidence against them and to legal assistance in making their cases. Two basic things that anybody who gets busted for a crime have come to expect.
And this overturns, this is all this stuff that was put into place in military tribunals, this is all Gonzalez's doings.
Yes.
Yes.
Now, the important thing about
yes.
this is that of the 330 cases whose results have been made public, all but three of them, 227 of them, were found to be, quote, enemy combatants, which means that under the law, they could be held for indeterminate periods of time.
But there's some of them have not been accused of anything, correct?
Yes.
And that's a very bizarre thing to me. It almost seems like, you know, I'm surprised that they haven't, you know, shot a chip in their head and released them back into the wild and just tracked them. I mean, I don't understand.
Yeah, right.
Well, you know, it's not beyond this administration to do stuff like that. But what I don't understand is, what are they holding them for, Riley? Are they a threat? Are they suspected of it? Because it seems to me that you hold them there long enough, they're going to have reason to become terrorists.
You ever hear "don't ask, don't tell"? Bottom line is, they didn't really share with the American people why these people were being detained.
And look at this: like, there's a video out that was released on an Arabic website that this is sort of interesting, that they suspect is an actual action figure. That, you know, that
oh, God.
Which means that somebody had to put a lot of time into making the action figure look human. Also, they have a little banner, and it's almost like someone was putting on a puppet show. But it
looks like a soldier, you say?
Well, yeah, it's a soldier action figure that apparently was a limited release in Kuwait, but it was released as a real hostage. They were going to behead this soldier, and it must have been real good. I haven't seen it because people fooled some people, but the manufacturer of the action figure said, no, that's our doll, and then they said it's available at. It turned out to be a commercial.
I thought that stuff was only on video games. Gee, I'm really behind
but
the times here.
It's just very interesting how easy it is to create a hoax or a fraud.
Yeah.
Especially in the age of reality television, all you need to do, people are so quick to believe a certain pace or tone or feeling to a piece of tape. You know what I mean? If it just has that green.
Yeah, I know. Alberto Gonzalez, Michael Chertoff, hoaxes, frauds.
Yes. All right, here's the liberal agenda from the Streisand compound. Write these down. One, during tonight's State of the Union, every time Congress stands up for Bush, sit down, and vice versa. Sit it down. Do a shot. Two, at the confirmation hearing for Gonzalez, urge senators to ask, does this bug you? Does this bug you? Does this bug you? And see if it becomes violent. Does this bug you? Does this bug you? How about this? Does this? Three, call Amnesty International. Protest terrorist brutal treatment of innocent action figures. There you go. In response, that's right. Save the plastic, guys. Four, support Bill Clinton's tsunami relief effort. Let the rebuilding begin. His legacy. Five, today's phrase, just drop it in the conversation. Watch how many times Bush blinks during his speech, man. That's how he talks to Bin Laden. Wake up, sheeple. Connect the dots and the dashes, man. Come on. Wake up, sheeple. He's making community blinking.
No.
What do you got?
Well, what do you got? Because we're going to talk about your dreams in the next hour.
And also the definition of insurgent and freedom fighter.
And freedom fighter.
If that ass is still listening and not gone over to, I'm not going to break it.
Well, no. And then later this morning, we're going to talk about the State of the Union with somebody who knows when we come back here on Air America Radio. Mm. Blah, blah, blah.
So, with 6 past the hour, we've been talking a lot about a lot of things. We had a little piece of Donnie Fowler, who was running for DNC chair. The only one standing, really, with any real chance against Howard Dean. Condescending to us. Condescending to Northern Democrats. Condescending to those of us who might drop into a salon or a cafe to maybe get on the Internet or talk about art or perhaps politics. And then dismissing it as merely, I meant Washington insiders.
Well, I agree with him about Meet the Press. I hate the press, but I mean, other than that, you know, I mean, yeah. I believe the Washington Post is the only newspaper in America.
Dig this, Riley. You're not a fidgeter, dude. Larson's a fidgeter. Clutch Larson fidgets. I happen to be a little bit of a fidgeter. Kalo Koskoho, you a fidgeter?
Not so much.
No, really?
That's not true.
Listen to this. You can lose, like, a lot of pounds, apparently. Now, this is a stupid
story. What, by fidgeting?
This is a stupid story, all right? But, you know, the truth of the matter is what they're deciding is that people who have a lot of nervous energy can burn up to 350 calories a day. That if you just sit there, and, like, theoretically, that's something you want to try not to do, right? Theoretically, if you're anxious and you're sweaty and you're, like, panicking. Panic, apparently, great for weight loss. So, theoretically, I should be in a lot better shape than I am.
Panicking is great for weight loss.
Well, I'm reading into it because they're saying fidgety people might be burning off calories, you know, just by sitting around, you know, moving their foot, wringing their hands.
Yeah, they probably smell bad. So.
Yeah, I know, but who would have known that anxiety and panic in some way, you know, could be a good thing physically? How do you like that?
Well,
it might be giving you a heart attack, giving you cancer, making your brain hurt, but you might take off a few pounds.
Is this in the Journal of the American Medical Association?
No, dude, it was on the AOL homepage. Should I just throw it out? I mean, it's a few days old anyways. I'm just like, if I wasn't such a weight-obsessed male, which is just stupid and it's boring and it's tired, you know, if I'd sit and talk, if I call my wife up again and say, I ate too much, she's going to be like, do you realize how often you talk about this? Do you realize how often, how self-centered that is and ridiculous? So now I'm talking to Kalo, the Costco ho. Hey,
what an awful name, by the way.
Yeah, it is.
Okay.
You can't call a man a ho. He's a man.
All right.
I guess you could call him a hoe, but I mean, he's not.
Dude, when are you going to
He's monogamous.
When are you going to Costco?
As soon as all the snow comes off my car, I will then leave the house and go to Costco.
But thank God you went to Costco because you didn't know you were going to be snowed in, but now you have 500 things of ramen noodles. So
that is true.
To get you past in, to get you through. See, Costco really paid off for you,
yeah.
Didn't it?
Lots of popcorn, lots of ramen.
Got plenty of jerky.
I actually ran out of jerky.
See, but the thing is where else are you going to shop? You can't shop anywhere else.
Oh, no. I don't even. I'm like, all right, I'm not going to eat now.
So how's the name bad?
What's that?
How is the name bad? How is the name not fitting?
Kalo is kind of odd. You know, my first name I kind of like. The whole Kalo, J-Lo thing's kind of strange.
Okay,
if I may say so myself.
So you want me to say Chris Lopresto, the Costco ho?
I don't like either. But that's fine. I digress. You know, whatever.
So
you're going to stop eating meat, so.
Yeah. So, all right. So where are you going to get a new job? I'm kidding. What are you talking about? Yeah, I am going to stop eating meat, and you don't think I can do it, thank you.
No, a chance.
So
not a chance
like,
in hell.
Big ones.
You don't like my nickname, and you don't think I, you know, you're not very supportive, man. I don't get it, man. All right, so what do you want to bet? What's the bet?
It's 28.
A box of ramen noodles?
Let's see. You are going to see your wife.
A week from Friday. All right, the meat's like, I'm going to finish the turkey today, so that means officially off the meat. By tomorrow.
Okay.
I'm not screwing around. And don't judge because, I'll tell you honestly, it takes a lot of time to kick things. It takes time to kick stuff, but there's not going to be any meat in my house after today.
But what I'm saying is you're going to slide back. You're going to, be on this fish thing, and you're just like, I had to eat some meat.
All right, I'll bet you. So you're only giving me, you're saying that by a week from Monday, when I come back from California after doing Jerusalem Syndrome at the Poway Center for the Performing Arts in Poway, outside of San Diego, next to Friday and Saturday, that's it's just February 12th, actually. What am I saying? I'm not doing it two nights. Yeah, you're saying that when I come back from that on Monday the 14th,
yes.
I will have eaten some type of poultry, beef, or pork.
Without a question.
How much would that be?
$20, man.
$20.
What's up?
$20, baby.
I want $20 and I guess, now because I will not have eaten meat, it'd be okay if you'd give me some noodles, too. I want $20 and a half a crate of noodles.
Whoa, half a crate?
How many? Well, what do you buy?
Dude, that's like 2 weeks of noodles for me.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. You know, and I don't want to mock that because they're probably chicken flavored, too.
Five. Right? Yes, they are, actually.
Well, I can't eat that, because I'm not doing chicken.
Oh, yeah. Well,
flavor.
I doubt there's any
chicken. That doesn't
chicken
mean there's any
sense.
Chicken in it.
It's
chicken flavor.
You're a smart man, Riley. Let's figure this out. Where does chicken flavor come from?
Somebody's lab, man. You don't have to have chicken to make chicken flavor.
Well, that's probably true, but do you think that's true? You don't think they use real bouillon?
Why bother? How much does it cost?
Yeah,
how much do one of these things cost normally? About 20 cents, 25 cents a piece? Trust me, there's nothing approaching chicken used in a 25 cent thing of noodles, right?
Yeah, but they boil all the bad stuff, like the feet. You know that they throw away?
No, that's for
in my cup of noodles.
That's for canned soup. That's not for cup of noodles.
I hate to rain on your styrofoam noodle cup parade, but they use feet for all the time. There's all the flavors in the feet. The dirty chicken feet is what they.
Chris, is it on there? Does it say on your noodles ingredients chicken feet?
No, it doesn't say chicken feet.
Chicken feet juice. But it also doesn't say pig lips and hot dogs either. All right. So the thing is like, you know, believe what you want to believe. What do you think, that they just have a little spigot with chicken juice? And they boil feet, and they boil heads, and they boil the whole damn thing, man. Whatever they can't put in the other stuff, You know, they boil it up.
You know, it comes down to which one's cheaper, boiling up the feet or finding something in a lab that you can do for about 2 cents a pop and throwing that in and calling it imitation chicken flavor.
They can make flavors of everything.
Of everything. You name it. Because they can do feet.
Have you ever had the chicken jelly bellies?
No.
Excellent.
Chicken jelly bellies? You mean jelly beans? No, man.
He bought it.
He's no, no,
really?
No.
That's
I've had a buffalo nut sundae, but that's different.
A buffalo?
Never mind.
All right. I don't know.
We're not going any further with that one.
That sounds like a fear factor.
Yeah.
Except you wouldn't get the ice cream. Anyways, Chris, so you give me a week and a half.
Yeah.
And I think that you're going to be sadly disappointed.
I didn't think you'll make it to Friday, man. You're going to be in the airport and just noshing on McDonald's or something.
Because J-Lo wins the gauntlet toss.
All right. That's fine.
Come on, Maron. Come on. You got to come back, man.
I'm still recovering from knowing that we've been calling him this nickname for months or almost a year now.
And you don't like it.
Just comes out that he doesn't like it. And then I'm wondering why all the seething resentment towards me.
Well, what's seething resentment?
You're undermining my...
He didn't throw the chair at you.
Oh, yeah, that was a good day.
That was like in April of last year, right?
I know.
I know you don't resent me, man. And you know what? Can I get a ride to Costco? I'm gonna go with you this next time. Can I go?
See, now you're making fun of me. See,
he's serious.
You're making fun of me.
I think he's serious.
Here's where you're mistaken. I've been making fun of you since day one.
Wow, that's true.
Okay, I'm moving out the way so he can throw the chair. Yeah. We got a break coming up.
We do in a second, but I'm gonna go with you. I'm serious. I could use. I don't even know. They have what do they have there? They have everything.
Toilet paper. You can buy yards and yards and yards of toilet paper.
Well, okay.
It'll keep you okay for the rest of your life.
Boy, that sounds like a day, Kalo. I'm going to go with you. You buy your noodles. I'm buying a bunch of toilet paper. Wow. That's going to be a party. I think we should bring the mini disc and record it.
Yeah.
Because that sounds like good radio, just about as good as this conversation is going, don't you think?
Exactly.
All right. 14 past the hour, Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning's Edition, our highest rated, most respected news show in America on Air America Radio.
It's 19 past the hour. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hi.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. We've got some issues. Got some issues here. You know, certainly the reason that we went to war, if you want to consider yourself part of the collective, we are the reason neocon death cult put us into a war situation was based on a lie. All right? There's a lot of things. All of the war is, on some level, bad. Okay? But watching Iraqis the other night, even after talking to Mick Ware, I mean, they have not had a vote in that country for how long? Over 50 years?
Yeah.
Okay. Tyranny, a horrendous situation in Saddam Hussein for a long time. Now, it breaks my heart to even think that maybe, you know, any of this could be traced to George Bush in terms of if anything good happens out of this. Obviously, you know, it was... If they are successful in creating some sort of functioning democracy there, the Iraqis, and if we do pull out, it's a good thing if that happens.
Yeah.
Without a doubt.
No doubt.
Okay. Now, I got this email yesterday, or the day before yesterday, that just stuck in my craw immediately. I had to parse it out myself. I had to think about it. I had to, you know, figure out why I got so upset. In honor of George Lakoff, you should be the first liberal talking head. Again, not a good name to call people. Talking head is not a compliment. But anyways, you should be the first liberal talking head to stop calling the Iraqis fighting against the U.S. insurgents. In World War II, they would have been called freedom fighters or the resistance. Stop using the right's language to make them seem less than what they are. Well, I don't really think that insurgent is the right's language. I think that the way they use the word terrorist is the right's language. That the way they blanketly, you know, they call everyone a terrorist who does anything anywhere that blows up. Everyone's a terrorist.
They called Nelson Mandela a terrorist for the longest time.
But insurgent, this is just a word that, you know, the definition fits the situation. But there is something about the word freedom fighter that connotes a certain, you know, there's a romanticization, a romanticizing, a mythologizing of a resistance movement when you call it, you know, a freedom fighter. You know, that's a noble thing, the freedom fighter. Now, I'm going to try and reframe a story that came out yesterday using this woman's language. I'm sorry. I don't know if she's a woman. I apologize. But I'm going to take her request and reframe a story that we got yesterday. Okay. Now, I'll just take it. It's an AP story. Okay. It came off the newswire. Now, here was the story, all right? Terrorist used a disabled child as a suicide bomber on Election Day. Iraq Interior Minister Fala al-Naqib said yesterday, in all, 44 people were killed in a total of 38 bomb attacks on polling stations. Police at the scene of the Baghdad blast said the bomber appeared to have Down syndrome. Okay, so the bomber appeared to have Down syndrome. So now, let's just reframe it using the suggestion of our emailer. Freedom fighters used a child with Down syndrome as a suicide bomber on Election Day. Okay, end quote, end reframing. Freedom fighters used a child with Down syndrome, okay, to blow himself up. Hey, go over there. See where the people are? They're candy. They'll give you candy. Yes, go over there. Okay, put this on. Okay. All right. So that's a freedom fighter. Then I get a email yesterday. All right, now, let me give you this. The definition of the word insurgent, rising in revolt against established authority, especially a government, rebelling against the leadership of a political party. Here's another definition. A member of an irregular armed force that fights a stronger force by sabotage and harassment. I got another email yesterday from a real ass, a first-class leftist fascist ass. With a show like yours, who needs Rush? Really? Do you listen to our show? I agree with the listener who emailed you that you are using the right's language and therefore countermining the left. The word insurgent can only be in effect if the government being resisted is legitimate. Not true. I just read three definitions of the word insurgent. There is no reference to whether or not the government needs to be legitimate or not. Since our occupying force is not legitimate, they are not insurgents but freedom fighters. That is, if you think that a freedom fighter's tactic is using a retarded kid to blow people up, not just people, to blow the same people of their same country up. So they're blowing up their own people with retarded children that don't know better. Okay, so that's what a freedom fighter does. But this guy hates the United States so much. Which, you know, is his pro. He can. That's all right.
He's as right as an American.
Yeah. But, you know, let's just understand something. They're using retarded kids as bombs. The freedom fighters that you're glorifying with your mythic language. Okay. So here's the hook, though. Okay. The Down syndrome example you used was disingenuous. Was it really disingenuous? I don't see how it would be disingenuous. They used a retarded kid to blow people up, their own people, the freedom fighters. Which means, okay, anyways, you should have said the Iraqi freedom fighters are willing to sacrifice themselves and their children, even a child with Down syndrome, to show the world that death is better than being occupied. Think about it. It's the context, you idiot, not the word. And your context is still trapped in right-wing worldview. Is it really a right-wing worldview to say that somebody who says, hey, retarded kid, come here and put this bomb on and go over to where those people are. Yeah, it's okay if they're your family. Go over there and blow them up. Come on. No, they have candy. Just run over there. Run fast. Fast. Now, is that using the right's language, or are we just talking about human decency, you ass? I mean, you know, really? Let's look up freedom fighter. This is a good one. Freedom fighter. Here we go. A person who takes part in an armed rebellion against the constituted authority, especially in the hope of improving conditions. All right, so does the jihadist who says, hey, come here, retarded boy. Does the jihadist who says that, do you really think that he's got a better vision for Iraq? Come here, retarded boy. I know you don't understand the Quran. I know you don't understand what we're doing here, but look at this. It's fun. Here, put this on. This is fun, retarded boy. Now go over there and get the candy from the people. Does the guy who said that have a better plan for Iraq, you moron, you ass? And then here's the funny thing. At the end of his email, he says, and your context is still trapped in right-wing worldview, it's back to Stern for me. I get what it is. You just want to see retarded people made fun of anyway. You don't care if retarded people die or they voluntarily lose their dignity on Howard Stern. So your problem is with retarded people, you arrogant, hateful turd. Come here. Hey, come here, little boy. Oh, he's retarded. I don't care. Put the bomb on him. Run over there. Get the candy. God bless the freedom fighters. Right, Riley?
Well, look, this guy is insulting genuine freedom fighters throughout history by trying to equate what's going on in terms of beheadings, using children as suicide bombers, and generally oppressing the Iraqi people in much the same way Saddam Hussein did. They have killed too many innocents to be called freedom fighters, folks.
Misplaced hatred of the United States. And I understand it. There's one thing to be critical, but it's another thing to be stupid. Hope you have fun at Stern. Give us a call, 866-303-2270. The Dream Diary's coming up, and then we're going to do Dream Interpretation. That's turning out to be kind of fun.
Oh, yeah.
866-303-2270.
This is Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Thirty-four past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yo,
Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. In a minute, I'm going to read my dream. What day is today? Wednesday. I don't go to the therapist till tomorrow, but
uh-oh,
I got another dream as usual. And we have been taking your dreams. If you call in and share your dream with us, we will take a shot at interpreting it for you. 866-303-2270 is our number. Call us with your dreams and not your hopes. Your honest, you know, real dreams. Here's my dream from last night. It's Groundhog Day, which is a big day for me since I'm the groundhog. I emerge from my hole and sniff the air. All these bundled up people let out a huge cheer until I take out a bullhorn and say, "All right, listen up, people. I'm only going to say this once. I can see my shadow." And you know what that means? Nothing. You hear me? Nothing. Will there be 6 more weeks of winter or is spring right around the corner? How the hell would I know? What the hell would I care? You understand? I live in a hole, for sake. This is just a bunch of superstitious BS, people, and you fell for it. Just how bored and drunk and stupid were your druid ancestors to think up something like this? And just how bored and drunk and stupid are you to be here now? You want to know about the weather? Here's an idea, geniuses. Talk to a meteorologist. They only spent years and years studying this crap. They can give you a very accurate assessment of climate changes and precipitation for the next 6 weeks. They've got satellites and tracking systems and digital radar. It's just a little bit more reliable than checking under a rodent's ass, okay? Besides, thanks to global warming, pretty soon we won't have any winter, all right? When the ice cap is melting, you're going to be too busy running from your starving polar bears to worry about my friggin' shadow. So beat it, humans. Get in your ozone-destroying SUVs and go to your energy-wasting homes, or I will bite you. And I'm pretty sure I'm raving. Rabid. You can pronounce it either way. Put your faith in science, losers. I have no answers for you. Rabid or rabid, either one works. I know that to be true. I've been through this. I woke up and my bed was filled with permafrost. Permafrost.
Is that today they're doing the groundhog thing?
866-303-2270. I believe that for your dreams. 866-303-2270. It starts with 866.
There you go.
We're taking dreams.
So it is. Today is Groundhog Day?
I believe yesterday is Groundhog Day. It's also the second day of Black History Month. Completely non-connected.
No, I know, but see, to me, it's like, which is more important, Groundhog Day or Bush's State of the Union, which comes up later today?
They're both very similar.
I think so. Yeah,
yeah, they both are fairly meaningless.
Both involve rodents sticking their head out of a hole. No.
No. I 866-303-2270 for the dreams. It looks like we got someone, Kathy, listening to LIB in New Jersey. good morning.
Good morning, Mark and Mark.
Hey. How are you?
I'm doing okay. I hope this phone don't break up because it's a piece of crap.
Okay.
So I'm going to talk quick as usual.
Okay.
All right. Well, my dream 2 nights ago, I'm being honored this Saturday in Belmar for my volunteer work with the Monmouth County Democrats.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be on stage, and I'm supposed to be really all dressed up. Well, of course not. I showed up and ripped up sweats. And I get up on stage realizing I can't get back home because it's a dream. It's a dumb dream.
Yeah.
I can't get back home to go put on a nice dress. So I'm up there. I'm accepting my award or whatever, on my honor, whatever it is. And my husband's sitting there about to faint. He's sitting in the table watching me. He's breaking out into a cold sweat because he didn't want to see me fall apart like this.
Oh, no.
I couldn't even have anything to drink prior, even though there's free booze, because we're afraid that I'm going to fall.
Yeah.
So anyway, my biggest – and then when I finally did get off the stage, I went and got drunk.
Oh, no.
This is Belmar. If you guys want to come, I can invite people.
That's down the shore, huh?
I'm one of three people being honored.
Wow. So,
show up. It's the Waterloo Pavilion in Belmar.
Well, what exactly are you being honored for?
For my volunteer work for the Monmouth County Democrats. It's me and two other people being honored.
Oh, that's
great. It's Frank Pallone's going to be there, I'm sure of it. You know,
oh, Frank Pallone, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, I like him.
He's well, great. I do too, but well, I think you know that.
Yeah.
Well, I can introduce you.
Hey, how do you like John Corzine, Kathy?
I like him. I like Cody, too.
Okay.
But you know Frank Pallone's going to be the next senator, right?
Ooh.
That's what I'm hearing, that I think Corbyn's going to pick Frank to be to replace him.
Now, is this prophecy or is this party?
No, this is some inside politics stuff she's laying on us here.
No, from what I understand, well, Bob Menendez is also in the running. But I think that Frank's always hanging around with John Corzine now because he wants the job. And I think that Corzine's going to pick him, so. But that's a good thing. And Frank's going to stay here in Long Branch. He's not going to leave, so.
Yeah.
Visit us down here. Why don't you do your show from Long Branch?
We've talked to you before, haven't we?
Yeah, once before.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll come down. I mean, that's not a bad thing
to go
down. I
got family in Long Branch.
I do, too.
You
do?
Yeah, I do.
I got family.
Why don't you let me get my phone number off the air? We could all meet up.
Oh, that's right. Now I remember.
Yeah, down the shore. Hey, listen, when it warms up a little.
I'm a very shy woman, you know.
Oh, yeah, I can tell. Yeah, That's the immediate vibe I get from you, is shy.
So you want me to run for stuff down here, but I'll never do it because I'm too honest. But
no, but you should do it.
I
think your dream, though, if we're going to get back to that, if we want to.
Oh, that was terrible. I don't even think I had makeup on.
Well, that was the thing. That's just like this. It's stage fright. It's, you know, the other version of that dream is showing up naked. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But apparently, at least you put some clothes on.
That would be frightening. Yeah. Why don't you come and take my speech for me? Because I don't know what the hell to say on this thing.
Well, what you just said, be honest. Just like you said,
be honest.
Said,
be you.
Tell people how you feel.
I will.
Wait, so are you a little nervous? You are, right?
No, I'm nervous.
Yeah, of course. That's what the whole dream is.
I can't get drunk before I go up there. I can have maybe one little drink, you know. Just
you don't want to get drunk.
Well, no. Yes. Well,
because then you get up there, you really make a fool out of yourself.
Well, you're absolutely right.
I think what you should do is just, the best thing to do is don't think about the outcome. You know, just before, you know, you take a couple of deep breaths. And if you got your husband sitting there in the front row. I imagine you know a lot of the people.
Focus, I do.
Yeah, focus in on some of the faces
but
that you know.
There's going to be a couple hundred people, Mark. You're used to that. I'm not.
Yeah, I know. But the thing is that, like, if you're just honest right at the beginning and say hi, tell them you're nervous, that people will warm up and, you know, they'll laugh a little bit, and then you just, it'll be no problem, no sweat.
Yeah.
And, Mark Maron, I have 5 cats, okay, so I know what you're going through.
Do you have a house? I have a 2-bedroom apartment.
Yeah, we have a house.
Are they outdoor cats?
No. Oh. They're in here.
Do all of them let you touch them?
Yeah.
No,
except for one, the ugly one.
Oh, see, that's why.
Do you ever dream about your cats, Kathy?
You don't think she knows you call her that?
No, I don't really dream about my cats. No.
Well, good luck.
They're enough of a nightmare. I don't need to dream about them.
Okay. Kathy, good luck with taking that award. And you are just nervous, and it's going to be fine.
Where in Long Branch are your relatives?
In Long Branch. I don't know. I haven't seen them in a while. But if you see some African-American Rileys, they're related to me.
All right. Kathy, we'll talk to you later.
Thanks, Kathy.
She's funny.
Yeah, she is.
Craig in South Carolina, what's your dream, buddy?
Hey, Mark, how you doing, man?
I'm okay.
All right.
Good. Listen, I'm afraid to have you guys interpret this one. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. That's okay. We're professionals.
Yeah.
All right.
It's something.
Okay, as a disclaimer, I had this dream before the tragedy in Asia, okay?
Okay.
All right, so I'm out in the ocean, okay? But instead of water, the medium that I'm kind of in is raw chicken parts.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
Which kind of ties into what you were saying about...
I know, man.
Right, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But it's like, you know, it's like that yellow and pink kind of thing, and it's still in the shrink-wrapped yellow styrofoam stuff that you get at the butcher, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, so it's an entire sea of packaged chicken parts?
Right, you know, I mean, the entire thing. You know,
oh, my God.
It's still, like, fluid, right?
Dude.
Okay. All right, so, like, this Well, tidal wave, this huge tsunami, you know, of poultry.
Yeah.
Rises up, and I'm, like, being buffeted, carried up to the top, you know, and like, I see that it's just about to the top, and I look to the top, and you know what I see?
What?
Riding the top, riding the crest, like some kind of guru on a mountain or whatever. It's old school rapper Tone Loc.
Oh, my goodness. Tone Loc.
Wow.
He's wearing a New York Giants football jersey. And he extends his hand to me, and in that kind of, you know, Tone Loc voice or whatever goes, hang on. And that's it.
Wow! All right, this is going to take some work. Stay on the line.
Yeah.
We'll come up with an interpretation. I'm going to have to do some research for this, Craig.
Yep.
All right, so you stay on the line. We'll be back after these breaks with the interpretation. 43 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition. We can't do it without you. Call 866-303-2270. That's 866-303-2270. This is Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Hey, it's 47 past the hour. Mark Maron, that's Mark Riley.
Yo.
We're interpreting dreams. 866-303-2270. We're on the phone with Craig in South Carolina, who has had a dream that he was floating on a sea of packaged chicken parts, and the sea became a tidal wave. This is before the tsunami, he says. And he's about to get over, he's about to get sucked into the undertow of packaged chicken parts as he looks up and sees Tone Loc surfing the wave. And Tone Loc looks down at Craig and says, just hang on. Is that right, Craig?
That's correct.
Well, dude, you're not going to believe this, but I don't know what's going on in your life. All right, but I've done a little research. I've done a little investigation.
Uh-oh.
But chicken, you know, just on a symbolic level, chicken means that you have some a lack of willpower, you're feeling cowardly about something. It literally represents being chicken on some level, that you're consumed with, there's a certain sort of thing in your life that maybe you're not standing up to, and you're getting overwhelmed by it, and for some reason in your mind, I think you might have liked Tone Loc or looked up Tone Loc, and certainly the attitude and disposition of Tone Loc, and even the lyrics of this song, he represents a certain amount of ability to be cool and deal with the situation, and he's offering you a little strength and support in it.
Hey, all right. That's not a bad interpretation, yeah?
Good. That'll be $30.
Well, thanks for calling. I hope you overcome that fear, whatever's going on in your life, man. Do you have anything? Does that represent anything to you, Craig?
No, actually, that was very good, actually, because, you know, I had no clue. And I've told this story a couple times and just got some really weird looks.
Are you overwhelmed with something in your life right now?
Maybe work and you know, that kind of stuff, but that's about it. You know?
You want to give your boss a piece of your mind and you just haven't been able to do it?
Well, maybe, yeah, you know.
All right, Craig, take it easy.
Thanks, Craig.
Thanks, man. That was wild. That was, you know, it's like you don't know where it was going. You know, and I'm thinking it's George Bush surfing the wave, but either way, you know, I've got this coward
but
thing in the back
Tone
of my head.
Loc.
It's great, though. It's like a great tag.
Right.
All right, so Trillian, listening in Columbus, Ohio, good morning. What's your dream?
Well, I have a lot of CSI dreams because I want to be a forensic scientist.
You have a lot of suicide dreams?
No, CSI.
CSI dreams, okay.
Yeah, and I was going up for this award.
Yes.
And, like, I was at school.
Yeah.
And then, like, William Peterson and all the crew came up, and it was just awesome and great. It was so cool.
Yeah, yeah. And so, okay, so how old are you?
14.
You're 14? And who came up after the thing? William P. Oh, all the CSI people?
Yeah, Phil
Griffin. Oh, that's great. So you did a presentation at school, and after the presentation, the entire crew of CSI came up and congratulated you.
Yep.
Oh, that's great. What was the presentation about? Was it about forensic pathology?
No, it was actually, it was my 8th grade graduation, actually.
Well, it sounds to me like? It sounds to me like, you've got a dream, you got something you want to do, and you've just been validated by some of your heroes in your dreams. They just said, you go ahead and pursue that dream.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think of that?
Yeah.
Well, good luck with that. It's an interesting line of work for someone your age to want to get into, but certainly a very exciting line of work, and I hope you pursue that. So,
hey, Trillian.
Mm-hmm.
was there something you were talking about a cat?
Yeah, I had this weird dream.
There's another one.
I can't remember it now.
There's another dream?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I had this a long time ago, kind of, though, but there was, like, a wood chipper in the backyard, and, we had a lot of windstorms a lot lately, and they were cutting some of our branches down.
Yeah.
The cat was in the backyard, Beauregard. He's a big, fluffy Maine Coon, I think.
Yeah.
And I was trying to save him.
Yeah.
And then the guy was like some crazy psychopath and threw him in the wood chipper.
Oh, no.
I started crying in my sleep.
Yeah.
And all I got back with it was his collar.
Oh, that's that's an awful dream. Well, you know, if you were a forensic pathologist, and
you find out who the guy was and lock him the heck up.
That's a nasty dream.
Yeah.
I don't even know what that I don't necessarily know what that means, but it certainly sounds like a nightmare.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the cat's okay, right?
Yeah, he's fine.
Oh, that's good.
But he did get bitten in the butt by a dog.
Oh, but how did that work out? Did he see okay?
Uh huh.
All right. Well, you know, it's weird that it sounded like one of those dreams where you thought it was real, right?
Yeah.
Oh, that's the worst kind. And you were relieved you got up and like, where's it? Is the cat in all pieces? And it wasn't.
Yep.
Oh. Well, I could get into the cat symbolism, but I don't think you need to. I think you were just, you're just afraid.
Just pursue that career in law enforcement, Julie.
Yeah. Thank you, Trillium. You take care.
Take care.
Okay.
Well, so now we know we got 14-year-olds listening to us.
Well, take this, though. You know, I'm looking up. I'm trying to do some research here on the cat, and it's like the dream that a cat, about a cat, seeing this, it either signifies treachery or bad luck in some respects that, you know, maybe this was a good dream in that way, but also can signify, you know, feminine sexuality, creativity, and power. And I don't know if I really want to get into that.
We're going to go there with a 14-year-old kid. Yeah, it's good move. Nice decision, Mary.
Oh, boy. All right, so let's take a call from Linda listening in Atlanta. Good morning, Linda.
Good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Hi. What's on your mind, or what was in your mind while you were sleeping?
Yeah. This is a dream from a long time ago. But first, I want to give you a pretty good story about Groundhog Day.
Okay.
It reminded me of the story. I worked for the gas company in Morgantown, West Virginia, years ago when I was in my early 20s. I hate to say how many years ago.
Uh-huh.
But me and this girl were clearing rights of way for the pipeline.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were, this is the, you know, during the ERA time.
Yeah. Okay.
So we came across this old dude. He was sitting on his porch, you know, maybe 90 years old or something.
Yeah.
It was coming up on winter, and we said, hey, what kind of winter is it going to be, you know, from the signs? And he said, I'll tell you when spring gets here. Anyway, we were kind of like really let down by that.
Okay, well, what are you going to do? Sometimes you just ask a guy on the side of the road advice. You're not going to get always the good advice. So what was your dream?
This is a dream I had a long time ago, and it was a real disturbing dream. It was almost like it was prophetic. And this is long before all this stuff started with 9/11.
Okay.
Long before I bought my house, maybe about 10 years ago, I dreamt that, and it was one of those real vivid ones, I dreamt that I was crawling on my belly in a creek, terrified. There were Arabs all around.
There were Arabs all around you. And crawling
in
a creek.
Yeah, and... you know, like military style, crawling on the elbows.
Sure.
Trying to hide. They've got automatic weapons, and they've got khaki uniforms on. They even have khaki turbans. They're all matching.
Like
that Dickie stuff, you know, that kind of khaki.
Oh, yeah, the Dickie brand, sure.
Yeah.
Ooh. All right.
Well,
we lost that one. So, she was crawling in a creek, and there were Arabs all around, and she wanted to be brave, but she couldn't, and then she said a bad word. let's get another call. Here we go. Let's talk to Kim, listening in California on the quake. We don't have much time. Kim, what do you got?
Oh, hi, Mark and Mark.
Hi.
I am downstairs with my daughter, and we're doing a puzzle, and I walk upstairs. I hear a click, 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 click sound, so I go upstairs. And all my clothes are out of my closet. They're on my bed. And I look in my closet, and in my closet is Al Franken.
Ooh, the old Franken wearing women's clothes dream, huh?
What date was this? It might not be a dream.
Uh-oh.
All right, so you're down there working with your daughter. You go upstairs.
Yes.
You get there. All your clothes have been rearranged, and now Franken's in your closet.
Well, they're out on the bed. They're not rearranged. He's in the closet, and I'm like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
And he's like, well, I'm going to put the whites with the yellows and the pinks with the reds. And he just lays out the idea he has to rearrange my closet.
Well, thank you very much. I think that dream is just about like the Air America and radio just started, and that, you know, it's changing your mind and changing everything in your life about how you look at things.
Wow, that's good.
Oh,
pretty good, man.
And also, we got to talk to Al because that's a little creepy.
Yeah, I would say so.
We have to play that for Al and see what Al thinks. He's like, nah, I don't know. I'm not good with colors. Women's clothes aren't bad. I remember that woman. I met her daughter, and I was in her. I'm in trouble. So where are we going now?
Hey, we're going out to Wisconsin in the next hour. Talk to our good friend, Brother John Nichols.
All right. Hey, brother. He wrote the book on Dick Cheney called Dick.
Yeah.
And he's also a nation. He writes for the nation. And he also writes for the...
He's previewing the State of the Union.
Exactly.
When we come back.
Mm-hmm.
Here on Air America Radio.
Six past the hour, I'm Mark Maron, it's Mark Riley.
Yo!
We're continuing the fun on Wednesday morning. Fun, facts, and fury.
Yeah!
That's right, don't be stupid.
I got a special happy birthday.
All right.
Happy birthday to Daniela Sharon's, my daughter's best friend, who turns 8 years old today.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday. All right, Kalo. Wow, he cut us off quick, right?
We were going to sing.
Yeah.
But you can't.
Why not?
Because these
aren't the mics for singers?
Dude, they charge you for happy birthday.
Oh.
So we have to just say happy birthday.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because that's going to come out of my pocket. Let me see how much I got. I can't afford us to sing happy birthday on the air. I got $20.
What, it costs money to sing happy birthday?
I think so. And you know who owns the rights to it? It's somebody weird like Michael Jackson or Paul McCartney. Somebody owns the rights to happy birthday.
Oh, wow.
It's the family of the happy birthday, apparently. The family of the guy who wrote happy birthday.
Oh, I know. Okay. All right. Now
that's weird. Kalo, get on the mic there. How do you enforce something like that? Like, that, theoretically, that guy should make money every time it gets sung anywhere. Correct?
Well, if it's over broadcast radio, I'm guessing he can hear it and then, you know, file a lawsuit against Air America Radio for using that said song.
I get it. So he doesn't have, like, spies out there in the world, like, you know.
No, you know who would go after it? It would be ASCAP or BMI.
Right.
It would be the I assume, the mechanical publishing people.
Well, it's one of those interesting things like plays, you know, because when somebody writes a play, you got to pay for the license to do the play. You got to be able to do the play publicly. You know what I mean? And then, you know, that's how the playwrights make their money on that.
Oh, okay.
I guess when you sing a song, it's not the same
as
when you play it on the air.
Gee, yeah. I don't know why anybody would try and charge us for that, because we would be off key anyway.
Come on, dude. It's not a matter of the quality of the singing.
Oh, it's just the song.
Yeah.
It's the thought that counts.
Yeah, I'm freaking out a little bit. I got this like, weird freak out feeling.
Uh-oh.
Hey, I'm going to be performing at the Pauley Center of the Performing Arts in San Diego on February 12th. I'm going to do the Jerusalem Syndrome. And I'd like to reach out to the ass in the Maryland area.
That
sent my book back to me. What a douchebag. These people, you know, it's so funny that, you know, people can just be so rude and so mean. You know, and I'm sure that I can be as well. But this guy, I get a package today. I open the package. It's my book. And some guy basically said, I read your book, you self-indulgent ass. Why do you think you're so special and important? Tell me where Jerusalem Syndrome, the play, is playing so I can see if that's any better. Find me there. But see, what the guy didn't get is that the entire play is about a particular type of self-indulgence. It's about a mystical self-indulgence. That's the whole joke of the play. It's the whole joke of the book. It's a sort of self-indulgence. It's a grandiosity, an exploration of spiritual searching through a bunch of different means, like through being a beatnik, through a brand loyalty, through a drugs.
And anecdotal grandiosity.
Well, yeah. Well, that's sort of what it is, yeah. What else is there? What else does anybody have, Mark Riley? What else are we made out of? You know, when you look at the context of reality.
I was
going to
say something really stupid, so I'm glad you stopped me there.
We were talking about this earlier, about this, how easy it is to fake a reality or a hoax. This doll,
the doll
that's being held hostage. It's so easy in talking to people like Jeff Jarvis and seeing what is the parameters of what we justify, what we consider real. You know what I mean? Now that there's very little, you know, that somebody can pull a hoax on Dan Rather, and put his credibility into question. You've got bloggers all over the world, you know, funneling stuff into the blogs, and that, you know, there's no barometer through which to judge what is true and what isn't true. On video, it's very easy to manufacture a hoax, so it's very difficult to trust your perception anymore. So all you really have, on some level, is right here sitting where I'm sitting. This is what I have, me. What's going on in my head, what I've been through in my life, that is the reality that I understand the best, and that is where I come from.
Well, that's hopefully the reality most people are most comfortable with, but not always.
Yeah.
There have been a lot of figures in world history that were not comfortable simply existing in their own reality.
Well, I mean, I don't love it. Obviously, you know, I'm not having a great time running the ship of Mark. You know what I mean? It's not, you know, it's not my favorite thing. This vessel is not
my ship of Mark is fine, thank you.
Yeah, I know, but you know, it's sort of like, you know, some people, you know, how you deal with denial and what you do to avoid yourself can sometimes look like something noble. You know, like a lot of people will do things that appear to be like, you know, like they're helping out the world, or they're painting, or they're being you know, pundits or whatever, but a lot of times that's just very sort of, you know, thinly veiled, like, I'm avoiding me. This is how I get out of me.
See, I've never had that problem because I have always browbeat myself really hard.
I know. Sometimes you do it occasionally. I don't see it very often.
I don't do it publicly, maybe on occasion, but privately, a lot.
You ever hated yourself so much you had to take a nap?
No. Nope.
Oh,
when I hated myself that much, I went out to a club.
Yeah.
Danced all night.
That's the sleep of the shamed. When you just spend the first 3 hours of your day going, what's wrong with me? I'm an idiot. What kind of idiot am I? Oh, my God, I'm exhausted. I need to take a nap so I have energy to hate myself later.
Have you ever tried to rip up a phone book or something?
That
usually works. The one or two times in my life I've really been consumed with self-hate, self-doubt, or whatever, I just either throw something or try and rip something apart.
I'll tell you, man.
Harmless.
A lot of it has eased off, you know. I mean, I used to have a lot more than I do now. You know?
Really?
Yeah, getting older and sort of understanding your limitations, you know, getting sober. A lot of things shifted, you know, so that the self-hatred isn't so deep. I don't know where self-hatred just comes from insecurity. It comes from, you know, growing up in a weird way. It comes from not being able to live up to your own expectations of yourself or the expectations you assume other people have.
See, it's funny because nobody ever had any expectations for me, so I never had to worry about those. I'm serious. I had a sixth grade teacher who said I would be dead by the time I was 22.
I got to be honest with you, Riley. I have expectations out of you every day.
I know.
When I get into work, I'm like, man, I hope Mark Riley's on top of it because I don't know if I'm going to be able to pull it off today.
No, look, I have expectations of myself.
Sure.
To what he said. But when I was a kid, I was told, and a lot of this had to do with the way I came up and where I came up, but, you know, I was told when I was like 13, 14 years old. Well, gee, you know, maybe you should go to a technical high school so you could learn how to do something with your hands.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. Because, and mind you, I am still to this day a complete klutz with my hands. But in those days, that was what black kids were told.
It's been rumored that you can't even make a sandwich.
It's very difficult. Macaroni and cheese, out of the question. But, you know, I have a brain, but that wasn't, you know, at the time, that wasn't what most people thought my life path would be. You know, people who knew me when I was a kid, if they knew what I was doing now, they'd keel over.
Yeah. I have very high expectations at home. They never met my parents' expectations of me. You know, it was always sort of like, why couldn't you have gotten an A? Why didn't you have a kid? But the other thing was, though, I got kicked out of private school, you know, and it was a very interesting thing because I was such a smart ass. I was always trying to distract the teacher. I was always cracking jokes. Mm-hmm. I became completely disruptive. They kicked me out of a private school when my parents put me into one, and they sent a letter to my parents that said, we suggest a boarding school for Mark. or maybe a military school. And then they put,
I went there.
I wish I had this letter for my resume. It said, Mark possesses the wrong kind of leadership qualities. What could that possibly mean? That's what I got to name my new CD. The wrong kind of leadership quality.
Yeah.
Oh, that's what I'm going to do. We'll be back to talk about some other wrong kind of leadership qualities. Like everybody
that, State of the Union?
No, the State of the Union and Michael Chertoff. And also a little bit of Gonzalez,
yeah.
And also what happens when the wrong type of leadership qualities lead to torture. 14 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Hi, this is Reverend Barry Lynn from Americans United for Separation of Church and State. If you want to get the truth about the Bush administration's ongoing battle against science and reason, tune in to The War on Brains with Mort Milfington on Morning Sedition, Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
You.
Sir, America Radio's Morning Sedition. You know what I'm saying? The facts, the fury, the funny. Morning Sedition.
There you go.
Don't be stupid. Yes! All right. So, we got this over the Skype. Ramon actually Skyped us. Can you say that, Chris? Kalo?
Sure.
Skyped? Have we been Skyped?
Yeah.
Kalo, okay, buddy. You're terrific. You're great today. It's just wonderful, all the support that's coming out of the board there. As tonight's State of the Union address approaches, speech, one of the most important people is someone you might not have heard of. It's Michael Gerson. He's Bush's speechwriter. He's a born-again evangelical who just can't help inserting religious language into W speeches. Here's Gerson's palm pilot for today, 5 a.m. Revised speech. Plead with President Bush for the 100th time that his opening line, "Welcome to my State of the Onion address," is funny only to him. The State of the Onion address. All right, just to him. 6 a.m., insert Whore of Babylon and Barbara Boxer into the same sentence. Yes! 8 a.m., go through President Bush's draft of speech and eliminate half of the freedoms and two-thirds of the liberties. It's fine. He'll still have plenty left over. Because, you see, there's a lot of them in there, Kalo. All right. 1 p.m., remind him not to point to people in the audience and make the call me sign. Buddy, call me. No winking. You know what the thing is in the hit? Look at this right here, Kalo. See? Look, see what I'm doing? See, you can see it, right? Okay. Great. This is going well. 3 p.m., destroy President Bush's first draft of the speech, the one with all the disturbing red bats, daggers, and pentagrams he drew in the margins. Because he was doodling the satanic stuff. You see, that's what that's about, that funny. Like I used to, and oh, man. 7 p.m., last-minute preparations. Tell President Bush that while his speaking in tongues idea is interesting, he might want to hold off on that until next year. Hasa, pasa, patasa, pasa. Yes. All right, you know what? The heck with it.
Hey.
To hell with it. That's what I say. Here we go. I got a couple other things here. Here's our new bit. This is a headline translator, which is going to have sound soon. All right. This is we're going to take a headline from the paper, put it through a magical machine that makes noises. You know, like, it's like this machine. We'll just put it through this machine and just, you know, like.
Whoa.
Loud. That was really loud, Chris.
Whoa.
What happened? I just pushed a button. It probably caused an accident out there. Didn't I? Is it that loud in the car, Chris?
No, it's not.
Okay. All right. Well, here's our headliner translator. here's, for example, from the New York Times, U.S. shouldn't cut force, Iraqi leaders say. Translation, Iraqi leaders stay on script. Latest ass covering called resounding success. See how that works? Can I hit the bell again? Can I do it again?
Yeah, do it.
Yeah.
That's better. That thing hurt my head. That last one hurt my head. It's still ringing. Should it be ringing? Do I have tinnitus? Do I have a tumor? Okay. From CNN.com. Militants hostage GI is 12-inch action figure. Translation, terrorists show lighter side. Val more funnier doll kidnappings in future. Yes? How about, is there something else? What does this one sound like? Hey, that's a funny one. All right. How about this one?
Oh,
yeah. Okay. Anyway, from the Hollywood Reporter. I've had this thing sitting here for, what, a year? And there's still things I don't know what's on there? That's hilarious. What is this? Oh, come in. Oh, it's just
hi.
Like, oh, it's, hey. All right, from the Hollywood Reporter. From the Hollywood Reporter. Come on, this is serious, man.
I know.
Report rips MTV smut aimed at teens. Translation, Bored conservatives fear rage depletion. Renew war on booty.
Oh,
yeah, brilliant.
I was wrong.
Oh! Yeah, how about a little... Now what do you want? Wow, there's no end to the fun. Wait.
That hurts.
Wait. That's like a Halloween prank. That's funny. Why is there a kid with Down syndrome at the door? And he must have been sent by the freedom fighters.
Oh,
all right,
Lord.
So anyways, moving on.
And up.
What do we got? So we've got some more stuff on Michael Chertoff, the new nominee for the Homeland Security guy. What do you got, Ryan?
Well, you know, there are so many things that are questionable about this nominee. His dealings with the FBI.
Yeah.
His dealings with the CIA.
Yeah.
And all of this, of course, around the issue of what defines torture, much in the same way as Alberto Gonzalez.
And this is referring primarily to the Walker, John Walker Lynn case.
Well, yeah, and you know, David Lindorf in The Nation wrote a piece that talks about the allegation that Chertoff was behind suppressing John Walker Lynn's testimony.
Mm.
In fact, pushing him to make this deal that he made. And by the way, the deal includes a gag order, which I did not know until I read this particular article.
This is all coming out in Spanish to me here, and I don't understand Spanish.
All right, John Walker Lynn, the American Taliban.
No, I get that, but you know what exactly is Chertoff guilty of, and why did he do it?
Okay, here's the thing. John Walker Lynn was scheduled to take the stand back in June of 2002, and he was going to testify that he had been tortured while being detained, and that's how they managed to coerce a confession from him.
I get it.
Okay? So instead, they offered him a deal. And by the way, there was the judge that was hearing that case said he was going to allow Lynn to put on military officers on the stand and other Guantanamo detainees who were witnesses in the abuse, or witnesses to the abuse.
All right, so they had a real case here.
Yeah.
Okay.
And see, the argument is that had Lynn taken the stand and made those allegations then, maybe Abu Ghraib, which happened later, would not have in fact taken place.
Yeah, it wouldn't have taken place, or it also would have tipped this. That what it implies is that Chertoff and Gonzalez and crew were hiding this stuff, and they knew what was going on all along.
Well, yeah, and Chertoff, according to one of John Walker Lynn's attorneys, demanded at the insistence of the Defense Department that he sign a statement swearing that he had, quote, not been intentionally mistreated by his captors and waiving any future right to claim such mistreatment or torture. And he attached a special administrative measure, essentially a gag order, that bars him from talking about any of his experiences in detention until his sentence is done, which, of course, is 20 years from now.
So he was tortured to tell the truth and then coerced to lie.
Well, coerced to keep silent, which he is now doing.
Right.
The thing is, he was facing 40 years. Had he gone to trial and been convicted, they offered him 20. He took the 20, and he also signed off on this gag order and signed a statement swearing that he had not been tortured.
Now, where does this put Chertoff, which means in Russian, son of the devil, or owned by the devil, or working in the Justice Department of the devil? Where does this put the process of his nomination? Is this petty? Is this nitpicking? Is it validated? What's going to happen?
It's not a deal breaker, but it certainly puts him right on the Bush team. These are the people that we are now going to have in charge of Homeland Security on the one hand, and the chief law enforcement official of the federal government in the case of Alberto Gonzalez.
This is the neocon death cult's justice arm. Get in line.
And they'll all say, "Oh no, we don't support torture."
Yeah.
But then they turn right back around and do things that would lead you to believe they do. Yeah.
All right. So when we come back, John Nichols is going to talk to us about what the president's going to say tonight.
I got plenty of nothing.
Yeah, that's right. He's going to lay out his agenda that will mean nothing.
Lame
duck here on Air America Radio. Past the hour, I'm Mark Maron. It's Mark Riley.
Hi.
We're here on Morning Sedition doing the big work. The facts, the fury, the funny. That's what we're doing here, the big work.
Oh, yeah.
Every week we bring you the latest news from the front lines of the four-year global war being waged by the Bush administration. Here with today's dispatch from... Can I talk? Can I... The dispatch? Here with today's dispatch from the War on Brains is war correspondent, Mort Milfington.
Dateline, Washington, D.C., home of the National Postal Museum and the world's largest collection of dog-eared yet undelivered stroke magazines.
Oh.
As the song goes... excuse me. Hairball.
Yeah. Okay.
As the song goes, the world revolves because of three little words. No, not the words I love you, but the words intrigue, deception, treachery. Because our country's most insidious consequence of overly managed mothering, chronic cocaine abuse, and the inflated Yale grading system launched his deadliest weapon to date against the cause of learning and educationment. George W. Bush 2006 budget. Yeah, that's what it was. More painful than my last eyebrow threading. The cuts this Lone Star lunatic plans to make will do away with successful long-running college access programs for poor kids and veterans, like Upward Bound and Talent Search. Not affiliated with Star Search, that crappy show in the 80s, which should have been cut. Man, I still can't believe Sinbad won. Is it just me? Even more unfunny than Sinbad is the sad reality that Bush wants to take the money for these programs and use it to fund No Child Left Behind. Never mind that Upward Bound and Star Search, Talent Search, have a combined budget of only $460 million, or about half the amount it takes to pay off the last surviving witness to Laura Bush killing that guy with her field in high school. Yeah, screw poor kids and vets. What do they ever do for us? And screw Sinbad. Yeah, I know it's been over 15 years, but Sinbad? I mean, Yakov Smirnoff should have won before Sinbad. Am I still out of line on this? Anyway, yes, Hannibal clawing at the gates with his garishly painted elephants laying blanket upon blanket of pachydermal dung on the last vestiges of learning are the ingredients of the Bush educational program, his Zenith Sinbad. Oh, God, come on. Still can't believe
Mort,
it.
Mort, this isn't about Sinbad or you or Star Search. This is about George W. Bush gutting our educational system. Why do you hate Sinbad so much?
Because he won Star Search.
No, he didn't, Mort. That's where you're wrong, buddy. He only made it to the finals.
But Yakov Smirnoff...
Smirnoff wasn't even on the show, buddy. What the hell is this? What is your problem, Mort?
I could have been a spokesmodel.
Oh, what?
I could have been a spokesmodel. I had what it takes.
Oh, no.
Looks, attitude, and style. Boy, I had style. Oh, yeah.
Oh, no.
But I didn't have the smarts, Marin. This was the Reagan decade, don't forget. Took me years to learn how to say flowery words like honeyfuggle, methylent, and jamoke in conversations without actually knowing their real meaning or proper usage.
Oh, that's very, very touching, Mort.
Hey, I don't need your pity, you Panglossian jackanape. Save your sympathy for all those poor kids and vets who won't ever get a chance to be spokesmodels. And you can blame it all on George W. Bush and that bastard Sinbad. Yeah, that's today's dispatch from the War on Brains.
Wow, man, you're sort of bitter. I didn't realize you had these other dreams, Mort.
We all have dreams. Many of them dark.
What's your dream? What do you want to do now, Mort? What's your dream for the future?
My dream for the future?
Yeah.
Never to be hurt again.
Oh, well, there you go. Well, good luck with that, okay? You know what I mean? Hey, but fuck up, buddy. It's going to be okay. You all right?
Whatever.
All right.
You know what?
What?
I'm coming up with a new thing to say at the end of every one of these bits.
All right.
Whatever just isn't doing it anymore.
All right, whatever.
Yeah.
All right, good luck with that. Like, what are you thinking? You got anything in the running?
See you later, punk.
That's all right. Anything
else? Try that for a week.
Okay. All right, punk. See you later. It's always good to cheer up, buddy. It's going to be all right. He didn't even have to. He couldn't even muster up a cheer up punk or whatever. Nothing. Mm. Okay, come on, it's all. The word sun will come out tomorrow.
Hey, wait a minute! Don't sing all of it.
I'm sorry. On the phone right now. See you later, Mark. Take it easy.
Get out.
Okay. On the phone right now, Washington correspondent for The Nation. He writes the online Beat column. His latest book is called Dick, the Man Who is President. He's going to lay out for us what the so-called president, the leader of the neocon death cult, is going to shove down our throats this evening. Please welcome John Nichols to the show. Good morning, John.
Hey, John.
Hey, brothers. How's it going?
Pretty good, brother. How you doing?
I'm fine. I'm sitting here. I couldn't sleep last night because I was so excited about the State of the Union coming.
I thought you were going to say that you're so excited about being on Morning Sedition.
Well, that's all week.
Yeah. So you're kicking back in Wisconsin, are you?
I try to keep as far from things as I can.
So what can we look forward to or look not forward to? I mean, what's he going to do? What's he going to try and sell
us? Well, I think, you know, I'm sure there'll be no mention of the Iraqi elections.
Really?
No.
I thought he was going to bring pictures. He's going to bring some. Hey, John, you know those guys you saw dancing on TV?
Yeah.
They're going to be there. They're going to be behind the dancing.
Well,
one guy kicking his head back in that weird way.
No, the president usually like picks somebody out of the audience?
Yeah.
I think he's going to have the entire population of Iraq.
Or at least the people that voted.
Well, both of them. And. No, I think you want to look for this quote.
Yeah.
Washington crossed the Delaware, Lincoln freed the slaves, and I brought democracy to Iraq.
Really?
Yeah, so stop whining.
You think he's going to say I?
No, it'll be my administration.
Yeah.
But no, I think, I don't want any of your listeners to be cynical at all.
No, that well, they're not.
That would be wrong.
Yeah, that's not going
to happen. But, you know, some folks might note that the State of the Union is being held, you know, almost immediately following the election, so-called elections in Iraq. And they might also note that that certainly creates a nice framework for sort of a victory lap kind of speech, and I think that's what you're going to hear tonight. The president's going to get up there, talk a lot about how, oh, there were doubters along the way, but things are really great now. I doubt he'll actually use the phrase mission accomplished.
Right. Let's hope not.
Tried that before.
Hey, John.
I expect that it's going to be basically that theme.
John, how will he use Iraq, perhaps, I don't want to use the word to pimp his Social Security plan, but my guess is that he's somehow going to try and piggyback the success in Iraq to say, well, you trusted me on this, now trust me on Social Security.
You are exactly right, and although that is the most illogical leap possible, only Bush and you can figure that out.
Thanks, John.
But that is precisely right, and I think he's going to get up there and say, look, there's a new axis of evil, Iran, North Korea, and people who don't think there's a crisis about Social Security.
Well, I hope he brings up some casino gaming devices up on stage with him to explore how it's going to work, perhaps.
Hey, look, I think he's going to say the stock market's worked very well for my family,
so
it can work for yours. No, the truth is look, Bush is going to get up there, and he's going to frame with the Iraq election, which is played well, and he'll use that as a jumping-off point for a speech that will still deal more with foreign affairs than domestic affairs, because Bush likes to talk about foreign affairs. Domestic affairs are messy and difficult, and you got to learn stuff. But he'll focus mostly on foreign affairs, and then you were right, exactly right, Mark. He will make the leap from saying, you know, look, we've done incredible things worldwide, so incredible that we're going to have to spend another $80 billion in the next couple months on Iraq, but now we're ready to really focus in on some big, tough tasks at home.
Yeah, on creating a situation that might starve old people.
Well, no, I think it's going to be like this. It's going to be, you know, remember, look at how well things have turned out in Iraq with, like, you know, suicide bombers and, you know, like, meth halls being attacked and all that. Because we can bring that level of efficiency to our Social Security.
All right, so let's continue this in a minute. John Nichols, we're going to talk more. I imagine he's going to talk about restricting victims' rights and a couple of other things. We'll get into that on the other side of this break. It's 43 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition, delivering you from evil in 3 hours or less. Air America Radio.
go. Got the wheels out. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yes.
Air America Radio. We got John Nichols on the phone, the writer for The Nation, also the author of the book Dick, about Dick Cheney. So, John, brother, what do we get? What's he going to say about restricting victims' rights, tort reform? That seems to be a big sales pitch.
Oh, yeah. It'll be, you know, I mean, you got to understand the crises in the world, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's nuclear proliferation. There's, you know,
environmental problems, global warming.
You've got the whole bit. And then, and then there's, you know, like people who get their, like, you know, liver taken out when they're supposed to have a heart transplant.
Sure.
Complain about it.
Yeah, they shouldn't have any right to get justice on an economic level.
They want the whiners. And so, yeah, Bush will do that. And, you know, he's going to emphasize it more than some people expect, and I'll tell you why. The Bush administration knows they're not going to get this Social Security scam through.
Okay.
And it's because of the Republicans in Congress. Every time they go over to the Republican caucus, you know, it's sort of like they show up and say, hey, guys, let's go take apart Social Security. And suddenly the room's empty. It's like that list. And so they're going to have something that they can actually, you know, quote, unquote, accomplish this year.
Mm.
And so tort reform is going to be very high on the list. And he'll talk a lot about the same, you know, horror stories. The other thing you're going to hear tonight, and listen close to this, is that Bush is going to go and start, you know, talking about tinkering with health care and health care costs. He's going to have a whole bunch of new ideas for how to, quote, unquote, reduce health care costs, and which is actually just remove the word cost from the end, and you get a better picture of what would actually happen.
Mm-hmm.
And but he's going to be working that turf a lot because the White House understands they've got a problem. You know, Iraq looks pretty good yesterday and today, but they know that it'll blow up again. That's just the simple reality of that place. And the Social Security reform thing is going to turn on them. They're going to keep trying to do it because their friends on Wall Street desperately want this infusion of federal cash. But in the end, they know it's going to be bad. So they're going to stake out some turf where they might be able to make some compromises with moderate Democrats, or at least with a few Democrats. You'll look at tort reform. You'll also look at some health care reforms. But in the end, you know, this is going to be, you know, essentially, the theme of this speech is not going to be a particular policy initiative. It's going to be an effort to pump up George W. Bush's approval ratings.
Which are bad right now.
They're terrible. He is at the same level of approval that Richard Nixon was in 1973 at the time when Watergate was stirring up. I mean, he's at 51%. And you know what percentage in yesterday's New York Times CBS poll of Americans said that America is doing better than it was 5 years ago?
How many?
20%.
Why the hell did they vote for him then?
I don't want to suggest that John Kerry might not have been the greatest candidate ever.
Oh, no. You're piling on, huh?
I'm not piling on. You know, Kerry would have been an okay president. But, you know, look, it's hard to lose to George Bush, but some people can. And, you know, or maybe. It depends on whether you want to count the Ohio votes.
There's still people waiting to vote there.
Yeah, you know, and you, and this is the line I'm expecting tonight. My favorite, if Bush, you always wish that Bush would kind of like blow. So sort of like Reagan when he had that kind of rambling thing about the Pacific Coast Highway in the 84 presidential debate.
Yeah.
But I just love to see Bush just let it loose one time and just point it, you know, at the senator from California and go, and you, Barbara Boxer.
John, I got to ask you something. I mean, the Republicans in Congress up on the Hill have been pushing Bush to put some meat on the bones in terms of Social Security, in going into some detail about how he's going to fund all this and all of that. This would appear to be a great opportunity for him to do that. Really?
Oh, wrong, my comrade.
Uh-huh.
You know, if he stands up there and puts too much meat on the bones, they're going to start actually talking about this thing in detail. And members of Congress are going to have to start saying, I'm with you or I'm against you.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact is that there's no way you do this Social Security reform without, you know, somehow finding another $1 trillion someplace.
Mm-hmm.
And the Republicans, yeah, you're right. They do keep pressing him to put meat on the bones because they want to know, you know, what they're going to be asked to walk the plank on. People could lose congressional seats on this issue. And so they want that, but Bush isn't going to give it to them. Bush is going to give you the horror stories. He's going to tell you that there is a crisis, and if you don't believe the crisis, well, you must be one of those people who didn't believe there were weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. And he's going to really pound that home, and he's going to do it in the context of, you know, a lot of kind of victory lap talk. Then he's going to do the most important thing. And remember, tonight's speech is not the big deal. Tonight's speech is simply a test run. They will, Karl Rove will have a bunch of people in a room with those little monitors turning them up and down. They'll do a lot of focus group stuff. They'll see what in tonight's speech flies, what sells well. And then George Bush will hit the road. And you will see him for the next 2 weeks going to states where you have where he won big in November, but where they still have Democratic senators and Democratic House members.
Mm-hmm.
And he will be delivering the themes that played well in those places in an effort to, A, pump up his own ratings, and, B, scare enough Democrats into backing off that he might be able to, you know, get the Social Security train running, that he might be able to push the tort reform thing.
Hmm.
John, speaking of Democrats, the Democrats did a kind of prequel to the State of the Union. Unusual, and why do you think they did it?
Because they don't have anything else to do. I mean, you know, look, they don't control anything. But the bottom line is, there's one really horrible thing, and then there's one nightmarish thing. The really horrible thing is having to do the rebuttal to the State of the Union address. Because, you know, the president comes in, and there's pomp and circumstance. You got the whole Supreme Court wearing their ruffles, and everybody's applauding. It's the Congress of the United States. And then they go to the rebuttal, right, where you have, like, some Democrat sitting on a chair in an empty room.
Yeah.
And it's a tough room. Right?
You've seen a few of these, haven't you?
That's a tough gig, John.
Yeah, it is. And,
yeah.
And so, you know, now they're trying to, like, you know, pump, give a little more life to it, a little more character by doing a pre-buttal. But the fact of the matter is that the test for Democrats is not going to be, you know, what they say before this speech or what they say immediately after it. The test is actually going to come probably Thursday. Maybe it might delay a little longer, but probably Thursday, when the Senate's going to take up the Gonzales nomination. And the fact of the matter is, if Bush has a knock-it-out-of-the-park successful State of the Union address and everybody says, oh, my God, the best thing I ever heard, that fight against the Gonzales nomination is going to lose some steam. On the other hand, if Bush looks a little weak or if he, you know, doesn't seem to get much traction, I think Democrats could really give Gonzales a hard time. They won't beat him, but they could get well into the 40s, maybe even more votes than they got against Ashcroft.
Hmm.
And that's – I'm not saying it will happen. It's just these are the dynamics that are in play. But that's what you want to watch for. I mean, saying you're going to, you know, do different things than Bush, you know, who cares, you know, right?
Yeah.
It's doing different things than Bush that's going to actually make news, get excitement. And the fact is that by Thursday, if the Gonzales nomination is taken up in the Senate, that'll knock the State of the Union off the front pages.
Oh, that'll be great. You know, I hope that the Democrats get a little traction with this, John. Thanks for talking to us.
Appreciate it, John.
Always, brother.
All right.
Take care,
brother.
Okay.
John Nichols, the Washington correspondent for The Nation. He writes his book, Dick, the Man Who Is President, is available on our website. I love guys who say brother. He's our brother, brother. All right, brother. So what we got going tomorrow? We got a pretty good show, right? We got things going on.
We got all kinds of things.
Mike Doty's coming not back. Mike Doty from the band who used to be in the band Soul Coffee. He has a tremendous solo career going. Great singer-songwriter. Last time he was here, blew us away. He's going to play some music and chat with us about some stuff. What am I going to say? Oh, well, I'll say it tomorrow. Yeah, because that means that the fax is coming in again. Isn't it where she says it twice? It's a fact from the Streisand compound. Here's the liberal agenda for today. During tonight's State of the Union, every time Congress stands up for Bush, sit down. That's right, and vice versa, my friends, at home. Two, at the confirmation hearings for Gonzales, urge senators to ask, does this bug you? Does this bug you? Does this bug you? Does this bug you? To see if he becomes violent. Does this bug you? Does this bug you? Three, call Amnesty International, protest terrorist brutal treatment of innocent action figures. Does this bug you? Does it bug you? Does this bug you? Four, support Bill Clinton's tsunami relief effort. Let the rebuilding begin. His legacy. Does this bug you? Does this bug you when I do this, Kalo? Does this bug you? Five, today's phrase is drop it into conversation. Watch how many times Bush blinks during his speech, man. That's how he talks to Bin Laden. Wake up, sheeple. Connect the dots. And the dashes, too, man. Does this bug you, Riley? Does this bug you?
Oh, yeah.
Does this bug you, Clutch Larson? Does this bug you? P.W. McDonald, does this bug you? Don't flip me off in the booth.
Hey, man, we gotta bug out of here. Have a good day, people.
Take it easy.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.